It's happening again. Welcome to Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. As we broadcast around the world, get bite-sized morsels and tidbits from our industrial organizational psychologists, other experts, and the latest research on the workplace to boost your organization's effectiveness. Sign up now at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from our experts at CBOC.com.
Welcome, I'm Dr. Jeremy Lookabaugh, Industrial Organizational Psychology Consultant and Workplace Communication and Negotiation Coach. Also, we have Tom Bradshaw with us, a voice and speech coach and a damn good actor too. He is the official voice and speech coach for the Industrial Organizational Psychology community.
Well, hello and welcome to Work Cookie, our weekly gathering of IOs, HRs, recruiters, and one actor as we try to make the world of work just a little bit better. And today, Jeremy, talking about making work a little bit better, we're going to talk about performance reviews. I hate performance reviews. Maybe you can convince me otherwise.
I can't. Done. I was actually thinking there was a point when I thought in my head, we're not doing the show. There's too much to cover. We're not doing this topic. It just hit me. There's so much great stuff. I'm working on an absolute thrill of a surprise for. So this whole month we're doing this theme of performance appraisals. I'm working on a surprise, 90% there. I can't say what it is because the whole jinxing thing. So just stay tuned and keep joining us. So the references will be in the show notes, and the references are what you can see in the chat. One of the big ones that we're going to focus on for this entire month, it's this book. By Paul, let me get all my PDFs. There we go. So it's a book from Paul Falcone and Winston Tan. It's called The Performance Appraisal Toolkit. Paul has written, I don't know, 14 books. He has, if you go on LinkedIn, it's Paul Falcone, F-A-L-C-O-N-E. You'll see all his incredible history working with organizations in these really high stakes executive roles. And it's this entire blueprint. Tom, we often talk about how we take these studies and we can actually start to create a blueprint from the results of the studies, because there's often charts and graphs. This book, I have the PDF version of it. It's 250 plus pages. It's the full blown book, but I don't know, 50, 60 pages of those are appendices where you can like templates. It's absolutely everything you need. So I found probably 10 articles on this, you know, research articles and some meta-analysis on this particular topic that we're going to review, but I'm going to keep going back to this actual book as well. And based on what you said, let's go back. And that's the general sentiment, right? Nobody likes performance reviews. They're inaccurate. Employees, you know, there's been books, let's just abolish the performance review. You know, might not seem like a bad idea at first, but we've got to have some kind of metrics. We have to be able to measure them somehow. So we're going to get all of our great minds together. And I want everyone to think too, what are some of the wildest, craziest ideas that probably won't work? I'd want to do some little bit of brainstorming here on how to modernize the performance appraisal process throughout the year, so that's part of an organization's daily talk, their lexicon, and that you're having employees, it's more of this pull towards it, knowing that most, and this is something Paul Falcone says in his book, consider most employees as their resume builders. They're there, and once they realize that there's not really farther they can go in the organization, they're going to look elsewhere, which makes sense. It's true. But there are a lot of different things that can be done, especially throughout the performance appraisal process. For instance, just providing opportunities for them to continue to learn. Cross training, for example, leading meetings, leading different levels. So there's all kinds of things that can be done and inserted into performance reviews. And throughout today and throughout the entire month, I'm going to share some of these very specific changes to wording in the like meets expectations, does not meet expectations, all of that. In this book, there's this, it's a complete guidebook of how you can change that in terms of like successful, partially successful, with absolute descriptive paragraphs. The need also for organizational leaders to have meetings about this so that it's not, you don't have this string effect of rating scales where you have 5% at the lower rung traditionally doesn't meet expectations. And then it keeps going up and up. It should be more of a bell curve where 5%, for example, of the organization are your meets expectations, absolutely top performers. 5% are your not meeting expectations. And again, we're not going to use that wording throughout, but then you've got this bell curve. And because that's how, when you look at performance in an organization, that's how it actually is. But the sentiment of the performance appraisal process, you're absolutely right. Employees think it's not accurate. This is a waste of time. Managers, we know what they think of it. And then eventually, for a lot of organizations, it becomes this piece of paper that gets shoved away until about the same time next year. And organizations really just, a lot of them use it to justify a merit increase. And some people say, look, give me a cost of living increase. We don't have to, shouldn't have to go through this entire process. But again, that's more of abolish it, but we can't really, we shouldn't abolish it. Because when done effectively, that performance appraisal process can be helpful to the individuals, to the organization, to individual careers, and to the organizational goals.
Well, you know, Jeremy, I agree with you that the actual evaluation itself needs to be better. That, you know, it needs to be a better evaluation tool. But still, you're handing it to an employee and a supervisor. Both of our, you know, we're not IO psychologists, so we don't really know what we're doing or what the results are saying. So how do we educate both the employee and the supervisor on how to actually successfully do these?
And that's, so one of the things you mentioned is the education part. And that is when you have, one of the suggestions that Falcone makes is, it used to be, and it still is, organizational leadership, look, don't be transparent. The less they know, the employees know, the better. We want them working, not diving into company performance and what's really going on. I forgot kind of your question, so I know I'm going on a tangent here, but finish and then I'll regroup with you, Tom. But one of the things is you can like point employees to resources on, here's what our company's doing. Here's the news of our company. Here's our balance sheet. This is what's actually happening, because they'll feel more involved, but they'll also start to be one with the company. And it's like with anything else, if you're not understanding what's going on big picture wise, how can we really contribute? Tom, if you could re-ask me the question. Normally I want to dodge it, but I do want to try to remember what you said.
Well, it was just the notion of handing a piece of paper, which might be excellent, into the hands of two people who really don't know what they're doing, except, you know, filling out blanks. As the employee, I don't know what this is used for. Should I be promoting myself and talking about all the glowing things? Should I be looking at all of my deficiencies? And then, you know, I sit down with a supervisor who also doesn't know what they're doing and what the purpose of this is. And sometimes it gets treated as, well, now I've got an opportunity to highlight everything about you that drives me nuts.
Yeah. So another reference that I'll point to, there's a really good chart on there, because there's probably 100 different ways to answer your question. The other article that we're looking at is called Evaluating the Effectiveness of Performance Management, a 30-year integrative conceptual review. And in there on page 687, I remember the page number, but I don't have it up in front of me right now. It's coming up. You've got these key practical implications of the entire review over 30 years of literature. So you've got everything from what the organization can do, what the organization should focus on, what employees should focus on, and how to really make it organic process throughout the year, where even teams, Falcone suggests having a spreadsheet in a company drive that you can track what the team's doing, what individual people are doing, again, with that transparency, because that makes it more of a, it's more collaborative. It's less, I'm going to go in a, what we feel, I'm going to go in a dark office with my manager and I'm going to, or a dark Zoom these days, and we're going to talk about my performance evaluation. I might, may or may not have a say, but at the end of the day, it's just going to be this painful process. Ooh, I'm looking at this screen at my notes. I look over here, Tom, where you all are, and there's a lot of hands up. So I'm going to turn it back over to you, Tom.
I see there's a lot of hands up too, and I bet you they're all horror stories. And let's start with Lee.
Yeah. So Tom, I'm going to beat you to the punch this time before you ask me. If you want an example of how not to do this, you know, you can look at the military, you know, once a year, and they take everybody at a certain rank and they compare them to everyone else at that same rank, no matter what your job is. So yes, I can see from the look on your face, that's as shocking as it. And I mean, there is actually on the evaluation form, they've actually done a fairly good job of actually putting in some criteria in different areas. And they even describe what those criteria are to get your 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, they actually do a decent job of that. And then there's, but it depends on, you know, who provides the training of how good that stuff is and everything else. But, you know, when you take someone who works in, say, you know, IT, and you compare them to somebody who works in logistics or admin, it's not really an apples to apples comparison. And then they rank you based on that. And it's a forced ranking, but, you know, like Jeremy came up with, you know, it's a forced ranking. You only got so many that can get to a certain level. And then there's a write-up that's basically subjective. And all of that ties into whether or not you get promoted. So, don't do that if you're listening to this. Now, contrast that to, you know, the organization I joined when I left the military. And, you know, we have, it's a minimum quarterly check-in between your crew manager and you. And, you know, there's you know, guidelines for that. And we do provide training on it. And then there's actually a list of expected behaviors and whatnot for each level of the organization. So when one of my employees says, hey, I want to get promoted, I have something to show them and say, hey, look, how are you meeting this? You know, you need to be doing everything at your level and you need to be starting on the stuff at the next level to show that you're ready for that. And how, and when we put in these things, when I put in a package to promote someone, I have to write to that. I have to go, okay, here is how this person is meeting these things. And how do I know that? Well, it's because I talk to the people on a regular basis and we have check-ins. And the company mandates quarterly, I do it monthly at least. And I'm just going to put this out there, managers, if you wait till once a year to tell somebody they did something wrong 6 months ago, you're wrong, resign now. So, you know, it loses its effectiveness the further away you get from the event, whether that's good or bad. So if they're doing something, you know, you get more of what you reinforce. So if they're doing something great, tell them. If they're not doing something so great, also tell them. Just, you know, be careful in how you do that, you know, praise and publicly, you know, all that stuff. But yeah, it's crazy. And the way I was taught and what I teach my people is to keep a notebook or a worksheet or something. And then every little cool thing that you do, write it down. And that's for two things. One is obviously for performance as you go forward, so that, you know, I got 30 employees. I don't know what each person's doing. And I need you to help me know. And one day you're going to move on and hopefully to something better. And you need stuff to put in your resume. Well, if you worked for me for 3 years, chances are something awesome you did 3 years ago, you're not going to remember that. So for both those things, it's really great to keep that little notebook. And also we get the opportunity to recognize people in, you know, the newsletter or reporting up to the people for our contract or whatever. And we put people in by name. Hey, this guy did this great thing. And so we try to do that as well. But yeah, I mean, you know, in the military, if it's not on paper, it didn't happen. So if you kind of go with that concept, you know, if I ask you what you did 6 months ago, then you should have it written down so you can tell me. And then we're dealing with fact, not fiction.
Well, it sounds like, you know, either you're going to get a promotion in rank or you're going to get used for target practice. So maybe I'll stay out of the military. Alexander, let's go to you.
That was really great, Lee. So much great advice in there. So I'm going to walk through kind of for my organization, how I've tried to structure it here, I believe that these type of systems should be engaging the employee to want to be more active in your organization. And so a big part of it, when we look at consulting companies, a lot of the employees love the aspects of getting to bid on specific work that they can do so that they can upskill themselves. But if you look at apps like Fishbowl and stuff, you'll see that a lot of the companies where they get sidelined or not put in, that tends to be where they start to feel more disconnected from the companies. And of course, every company has organizational goals. They have a set agenda of where they're trying to get to. For our company, we need specific new technology skills. And so when we look at that, we can say, hey, here's skills that we don't have right now, but that we're going to be needing in X amount of time. You can start to allow people to apply to get those skills, to learn those skills, and then be able to measure that. How active are they in helping the company achieve these skills and goals? When you're not just looking at kind of, in a sense, useless metrics, but actual, are they making their deliverables and being able to contribute to the team? And how much are they investing into the company and themselves? To me, that's a really great way to see how their performance is being evaluated. So that tends to be how we try to do it here.
I want to come work with you for you. That sounds like a really great way to get evaluated. Let's go talk to Linda Ann. I'm sure you've had lots of experience with evaluations.
I have had a fair bit of experience. And so... Part of it is making sure that people see the process as an equally contributing process. In other words, the employee is contributing to the process as much as the supervisor is. And people need to be trained on how to use whatever tool you're using. I think it's important from my perspective to have both qualitative and quantitative information included in that performance review. My experience with that is when this is done well, the employees take a significant amount of time in completing it and putting in the information. And usually the supervisor needs to understand this is not something you go, oh, damn, I've got so-and-so's performance review in an hour and sketch it out. That is not okay. And the supervisor needs to put in that significant amount of time, not only beforehand, but during the process. A good conversation will last an hour and a half to 2 hours, and that needs to be blocked out. And the employees really, really appreciate that significant time. In addition, when you're looking at how to set this up, the leader's performance expectations need to be aligned with your strategic goals. Those need to be defined in their performance expectations. And then as it pushes down, those expectations that you set for the people that report to you need to feed into those. That sets up a symbiotic relationship, the synergistic relationship, really, where the leader now sees that their success is tied to the person's their subordinates' success, right? And gets the things out of the way. And then the subordinate really sees how the leader is creating success for them. So it's a very integrated process. And I'm going to leave it there for the moment.
Well, let me ask you, Linda Ann, what is the role of HR in all of this in the area of how do you train the people who are giving the evaluations, those supervisors? Should HR be chatting with them or giving them information or training them in evaluation?
Absolutely. And I used to do that. I used to attend certain performance reviews and model things for them. Also talk to them before and afterwards about what was going on if there were certain situations. And it also needs to be focused on two other things: the professional development of the individual, right? What are we doing to develop you professionally and make you successful? And that lends to getting that full feedback from the employee to me. And then that will be very revealing to you in making sure you've got the right person in the right seat.
Thank you very much for that. Nick, let's go to you.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, and there's a ton of just emotion around it. You know, your reaction, Tom, to say, ah, it's a burden, it's a problem. And I think part of that is it's one of those things, it's a way in which we have to work that's not actually the work of the company. You know, managing performance and things like that, it's kind of like sharpening a knife or keeping your tools well maintained. If you don't do it, you're going to suffer the consequences. But it is something that's out of the natural rhythm of work to have to do. And it is such an emotionally charged sort of point of view, because so often, you know, people's identity are tied up in what they do, and they want to do well or be seen as doing well. And so any level of criticism that comes up in a performance review conversation is going to be that much more amplified, particularly when it's that, okay, this is the once a year burden that we do, and we're going to get everything out on the table. Again, we've all kind of stated that's the wrong way to do it. So you have to be intentional. And unfortunately, there's no one size fits all to do performance review well. You have to consider your organization. You have to consider the type of role, the outputs that you want, and really say, this is my clear expectation of what we want you to do. And, you know, this is how you get there. So again, you have to stop and think and be deliberate in what you're defining, how you're defining, what it impacts. And, you know, I would also suggest moving it a little further away from the compensation conversation, because when those are so closely linked, there's just that much more kind of tense up and pressure on the whole endeavor altogether.
You know, Nick, I want to ask you, because, you know, the whole situation, there's a bit of a power imbalance, especially when you're sitting in that chair. Why aren't employees being asked to evaluate their supervisors or their organizations on a regular basis? Why aren't we having those discussions?
Because capitalism. You know, I think there is that power structure there. And it is the way that it is. And a lot of times this is top down. You would think, as organizations have really kind of flattened out, as, you know, there's kind of a need to have the skills for tomorrow, that dialogue would be happening, because your job this year is not going to look identical to your job next year or the year after. And so part of this performance review is, how are you adapting? And yeah, we should speak to leadership of, are you adaptable? Are you flexible? And again, that comes down to a cultural touchstone of, do you have open conversation between different levels? You know, are you doing skip level conversations? Do you even still have a hierarchy that makes any sort of sense?
Thank you very much for that. Rich, let's go to you.
Yeah, actually, to kind of address that last point, that last question you asked, Tom, there are job satisfaction and employee engagement surveys now that do ask you to rate, you know, your supervisor. Of course, if people feel intimidated in the workplace, you know, they're not going to answer, you know, truthfully or give that feedback. But if you, yeah, I guess this comes to where the other thing I want to talk about, which is, you know, to really get people involved in the process where it's not a burden. I think training is key to this, right? And training both the employees and the managers in more of a structured format to be able to understand what that process is going to be like, just to set those expectations. I've seen that done through some online training that was pre-recorded, and you had to go through it and answer some questions at the end. I've also seen it as an in-person or virtual training, you know, where we're actually interacting with people. I see both of those, and they both, I think they've worked effectively, as long as we're using something that's structured. In fact, SHRM put out a white paper back in 2004. And it says here that employers and managers feel motivated and able to use the performance management system effectively. And this training does facilitate that. They also say that when they are required to attend a structured performance briefing, that it really sends a message that this is important to everybody, right? So I think we have some opportunities here to do this. And it doesn't have to be organization-wide. You know, I've personally, when I've done some consulting work and also in some of my executive roles, when we've rolled it out in like one department, and we have proof of concept in one department, and we can then, you know, proceed to try to roll that out to the rest of the organization. It's always when you have that evidence behind you, I think you have a little more leverage to make a difference.
Well, you mentioned Shermerick, Rich, and I want to just ask you briefly, do you have any concept or idea about how many organizations are actually, you know, looking into SHRM, using SHRM as a percentage base? Because I've taken a look at it and it looks really amazing, but I don't know any organization that's looking at it.
Oh, I mean, I honestly do not know the user base of SHRM or like the size or scope of or anything. I just, you know, personally, I'm a member and I'm, you know, a SHRM CP because I like the content that they have. And I think a lot of it is very, you know, it's both the information that they put out there is both valid and reliable for the most part that I've, you know, in my personal experience, there are some things that I can push back on, but I'm not going to do that here. But in terms of this, that, you know, they put out several white papers and I thought that they were pretty insightful. So.
Well, thank you very much for that. Dr. Martha, let's go to you.
Let me just say that we have heard some really great things so far here today. I think for those who listen to this episode later on, this is one of those episodes that I would say, listen to it more than once, because what we've heard so far are absolutely priceless ideas that organizations should be considering. I think generally what we're seeing is that there's an outdated model of performance reviews that is very much still what's happening in a lot of organizations. There is a lot of emotion attached to it. Everything from I hate having to do this as a manager to I hate being on the receiving end as the employee. There was an idea presented as just as an example of an HR person being present at a review. So now we could potentially be looking at a scenario where an employee feels like somebody's ganging up on him two against one. Something as simple as having the HR person sit on the employee side, being their champion, might make all the difference in the world for that particular event. But you know, we really need to encourage organizations to start revamping how often and why they engage in this. It has to be customized, as I think it was Nick who mentioned it. It has to be a two-way conversation, and it has to have a purpose beyond that archaic, now we're going to tell you everything you're doing wrong for the last year event or experience, which I think a lot of people kind of have that feeling about it, whether it's subconscious or conscious. So we really, really need to work together as a community of IOs, HR personnel, and business owners to change that. Because I think the vast majority of the performance review experiences are related to that old model. And I think what we're seeing companies do is throw their arms up in the air and say, forget it, we're not doing this at all, right? This isn't doing anybody any good. The only time we're using it is to justify pay increase or justify firing someone. We have it in writing. So why put everybody through this stress? And a lot of companies just do away with it. But just hearing what the ideas are being presented here today, it can be so much more productive. It can be so much more beneficial for everyone involved, but nobody knows what to do or how to do it. So that's my input on this. We really need to come together and just change this whole thing globally.
Well said. And you know what? You clicked on a great point where, you know, in my experience, when it comes to employee development, it happens once a year during that review. And we've lost that ongoing development that could be so much more beneficial. So thank you very much for that. Jeremy, let's go back to you.
I love Martha checking in with the golden nuggets and starting to pave that yellow brick road of like how it should be done and putting everything together. So thanks. That's great, Dr. G. I'm going to do a bit of a zigzag. So first, I want to mention, we're talking about, as we are modernizing the process, I'm gonna point back to this book by Falcone, it's so chock full because there is so much to cover. It's chock full. And I'll just give a couple, there's probably 50 different topics, but there's everything in here. There's even like FAQs and questions and answered in this book. Think about how important these topics are. In chapter two, there's revised expectations for a performance-driven culture. So how are you revising that based on the particular organizational culture? In this particular book too, there's also, they have different templates for different models of your organization. If you're a mature organization, there's a template for that in terms of what are the criteria that employees should be evaluated on? And then what are the rating scales that they should be evaluated on? They have the same thing if it's a growth company, et cetera, et cetera. So again, it's chock full. There's also chapters on attracting talent, compensation market strategy. So how do you actually find, you know, are you looking at the consumer price index? Are you looking at the employee cost index? Are you combining different things? And of course, as I mentioned, reinventing the overall score and the terminology to avoid, you know, in academia, but we call it grade inflation, but it's the same thing when you're looking at these organizations. It includes how to, you know, writing meaningful goals and actually work plans. And there's a little exclamation point, your employees know best. And we all like to hear that. There's a part in chapter seven on creating links between business strategy and organizational performance, because performance is a moving target. Chapter eight has common questions and answers that you can actually use to build. And by the way, we're not getting paid to plug this book here. This is just something that I've loved for, and I've loved this book. I've used it in many consulting situations. So I'm just a big fan. I know its value. You know, the question asked and answered, what's the difference between scoring individual competencies on the review as opposed to an overall score at the end? Because again, based on the type of company, growth model, mature company, et cetera, it's different competencies. And I'll share some of those. And then what's the difference between that and an overall score that's earned? What if employees refuse to complete the self-review? Is it the disciplinary action? What do you do then? What's the ideal frequency of the feedback? Quarterly, semi-annual, annual? So a lot of that is covered here for the things that we can't get to. And again, I mean, we could change Work Cookie podcast only performance reviews and never cover everything. I want to mention some of this, mostly verbatim. If anyone has the book, it's on page three. This kind of hit home for me. Isn't it funny though, that most organizations pay scant attention to measuring such a critical asset as your human capital? Business leaders get their MBAs and study Peter Drucker, whose timeless wisdom included the critical business strategy of what gets measured gets managed. And they learn to apply it to all facets of their business, R&D, sales, average return rate, overhead, costing trends, etc. Falcone continues, but how often do you hear of business schools teaching about measuring the human capital asset, in other words, worker performance? So, and again, we're not talking about expense-related metrics like labor expensive, recruiting cost per hire. Instead, there's four things here that Falcone mentions in terms of measuring the human capital asset. One, performance review patterns and trends over time. Succession planning exercises, bench strength and pipeline development, voluntary versus involuntary turnover, especially if high performing talent, you want to keep those. And then ROI calculations that tie human capital performance to key financials. Now this book, the goal is to take the first one of those four, which is performance review patterns and trends over time, and make it really that organizational staple moving forward. I'm going to continue reading this, if I may. Managers and supervisors who are responsible for issuing reviews and constructively critiquing their teams will be held accountable for strengthening the muscle of their organization's human capital asset. And their key focus as leaders should lie in attracting, developing, and retaining the best and brightest talent in the industry, not just the company, that they can produce. Now, and here's where it comes to the employee frustration. Employees who have up to now tolerated being reviewed will see this renewed process as an ongoing dialogue, like everyone here is saying, with specific communication points where they're responsible for scheduling time with supervisors to evaluate performance, against the goals that they've established, basically making this a living, breathing snapshot of human capital performance at any given time. And then there's a light here, right? I'll continue with Falcone. He says, folks, this is meant to be fun. The greatest gift the workplace offers lies in helping others grow in their own careers. Creating an environment where people can motivate themselves is what performance management and leadership development are all about. And Tom, we've said it many times here that people are naturally motivated. There's a lot of how do we motivate employees? And a lot of times we should be thinking, how do we take away the roadblocks from people becoming motivated? And Falcone continues, so go ahead, be the change agent you've always aspired to be. Become the go-to person for cleaning up bottlenecks that plague individual and group performance, and develop a human capital dashboard that measures patterns and trends in your company's performance. In short, create a reputation for being the turnaround expert in the area of leadership and human capital performance. You'll be giving your company the gift of a competitive advantage, all while developing a reputation as an outstanding leader and problem solver that will propel your own career to new heights. That to me this is meant to be fun. It is meant to be, it's very, very challenging, but it creates a vision of what happens when it's all said and done. Cleaning up bottlenecks, developing a human capital dashboard, measure patterns, measure company performance, let employees be involved. So all of that, it's amazing. Here are some other, Tom, don't give me the hook yet. Here are some of the thoughts that I had with note preps. And I was thinking, what is really missing with performance reviews? When you think about it, you've got motivation, clarity of the process, lack of motivation due to lack of perceived fairness, time, all these different things. And I'm keeping in mind what everyone said today. So think of how much time managers and employees spend on reviews along with their employees, right? Linda Ann mentioned, when you're doing this, sit down and take 2 hours and really go through it. I'm gonna take a side note here. I've always been a big fan. It can be an activity. Tom, I mentioned along, I'm not gonna pull you into my thoughts, Tom, and make you responsible. I mentioned a long time that it's not necessarily a bad idea, because during this performance review process, that Falcone points out is making sure that the job descriptions are right. How hard is it to sit down with an employee and look at what your job description is, get it to where you want it to be, or let me scratch that, look at the job description and just take a yellow, red, and a green highlighter and think, and just say, how are these things going? What are some of the wins? What are some of the opportunities? What are you struggling with? How can I remove these barriers? There's all kinds of different ways to start to do that. So back on track. When you look at all how much time they spend on the reviews, also think about the lost productivity and the morale during the process when it comes to it. It's performance appraisal time. You've got worry, gossip, you've got strained relationships, everything that's associated with it. So what if instead companies took a baseline of what all this is costing the company and simply turned the manager into the coach, which is what a manager or leader should be, with formal or informal, frequent check-ins on goal creation, progress, removing roadblocks, and having simple temperature checks along the way. And if you want, sure, you want to put it on paper and have the manager and employee sign is kind of like a little pledge together, you can do that too. But think about how much time that would take to have those check-ins, to have an actual coaching relationship between manager and employee versus 2 hours for the sit-down. 2 hours to fill it out for each person. Now you're at 6 hours. Then you got lost productivity and morale. So now you're 10 hours, blah, blah, blah. I know, even if it takes 10 hours throughout an entire year of short meetings for manager and employee to get together and have a coachy relationship, even if it's the same 10 hours, isn't the result going to be better? Those are my thoughts. So next, Tom, no hook yet. Look at what performance reviews accomplish or actually fail to accomplish. So for employees, right, it's pretty much all they know. It's whether or not they get a salary increase, how much they get. For supervisors, it's a chance to highlight, maybe discipline employees. For organizations, it's a chance to keep everything within a budget. Some organizations, we've all seen this. manipulate the performance appraisal system to avoid a salary increase that would negatively impact the bottom line. So they think. However, if instead of saying, well, we can't give salary increases even though they deserve it because it'll impact the bottom line, you know, companies keep in mind that the bottom line might be the accurate one that you think of when you look at the overall productivity and morale, instead of if you actually did it the, I'm not going to say the right way, because there is no right way. It's all tailored to the organization. But if you did it a better way. Tom, hook accepted.
Well, thank you very much for that, Jeremy. And but my experience with roadblocks is usually a manager going, look, there's a roadblock. And we stare at it for a while and they point out it's not going away. And that's the end of the discussion. So I want to live in that world. Nick, let's go to you.
Yeah, it's a whole lot. And there's many ways that it's been done wrong. And I think some of that, as I sit and think about kind of how things have changed so rapidly over the last 10, 20 years, I think performance appraisal is still very much in the model of you come in as an intern, you work your way up through the mailroom, you get your gold watch and a pension at the end of that. And that has gone long since the way of the dodo. So you've got a system that is trying to focus on the entire life cycle of the employee rather than, hey, they may be here for 6 months, they may be here for a project. And so I think that scope, comes a certain level of bureaucracy because there's an assumption that you're going to have year over year over year to really see where this thing is going. And that's not the case anymore. We've got people job hopping, roles changing, upsizing, downsizing, side sizing, all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, that's why the model has to change, because there's too much bureaucracy in it and it frustrates people. And it's not a personal conversation about how are you doing your job? How are you feeling in this organization? It's, hey, I've got to check this box to make sure that my legal obligations are covered. And you know, my boss is breathing down my neck it's coming downhill as well. So I think that's the emotional side of it as well. And to your point about why aren't we having people speak up as well, is it's conflict and nobody's really good at conflict. And I think a performance review does have the potential to have a lot of conflict of, well, I don't see it that way, or this is what I was thinking. And nobody's willing to take that 2 hours or whatever to really have that back and forth and say, well, this was my intention. Well, this is how it was perceived, and this is how we need to go moving forward. And even that three-step conversation, it's uncomfortable because you have to potentially admit that, oh no, I was wrong, from manager or employee. And I think that that's not something that people are often willing to do in their professional life because they see it as a liability and a risk.
Next time I have an evaluation, I'm going to invite all of you into the room. that'll make me feel better. Linda Ann, let's go to you.
So a couple of things to some of the points that Jeremy was making, and I want to start this with absolutely fair, share financial information and provide transparency on some level for that. And I've been in situations where, and it was shared at the end of a year as part of the presentation for the strategic plan for the coming year. And because it was shared and there's a good culture there, it's a safe environment, right? The first response was, what can we do to make it better? How can we change this? What can we contribute to make a difference there? And so it's important to give them that opportunity to understand and to participate in the success of the organization, just even on that level. And so a couple of other things. One is where Jeremy was mentioning about the job description. That's exactly what I have people do, is I have their current job description and I have their next level job description. I ask them to go through and highlight all the things that they need to help that on their current job description, where their skill set needs improvement, you know, where they need to develop those skills, and then to look at the next one and what do they need to develop for that one as well. And that's part of the professional development plan, as what skills do you need to build in the next year so that you can move forward in the way that you want to. Also on that professional development form, which is different than their performance review, is what motivates you. And so it's important, everybody is motivated, but they're motivated by different things. So it's important as a leader to understand what motivates your people so that you can communicate to them in their language. The other thing too is as an employee, track your impact. I've said that before. Keep that folder, as someone else had mentioned, you know, always keeping just a record of what you have accomplished. Just drop it in, whether it's a hard copy, an electronic copy, whatever it is, so that you can go back and do your own annual report for yourself at the end of the year. And I know I've mentioned this to Jeremy and he kind of had a heart attack about it, but I, as part of performance reviews, was they had to provide me an updated resume. And that was a gift to both of us, right? Because number one, I was genuinely interested in making sure they were successful. And I wanted to know that they were in that seat because they wanted to be there, not because they didn't have an updated resume. And it was just, you know, a good gift for both of us, right? They always had one if they wanted to leave. And as a leader, and this is another point I want to make, as a manager, you are responsible for turnover in your department. And when there is turnover in your department, if there's any kind of above the norm department, then you need to be evaluating, you know, that's a red flag that needs to be looked at for your department. And we need to understand the cause. Is it a lack of skills? Is it something that you're not paying people? Whatever that is. But that's a direct responsibility of the manager. And to the point of job descriptions, the job descriptions need to be updated. And one of the expectations is in your performance review is that you perform your job description proficiently. So that covers a whole lot of pieces there. And I know we're short on time, so I'll let somebody else speak, because if we have a whole month to talk about this.
We certainly do. And I think we're going to maybe even need a couple more weeks after that. Rich, let's go back to you.
First of all, I love that idea actually about having them build a resume, although maybe not build a resume, but have them provide in story form things that they've done. What do they do? How do they do it? And what the outcome was. I've had my employees do that with me in performance reviews. I think it's you have to own your career, and that's something that, you know, you're going to be coached on if you get a resume writer or a job coach. But it also helps to put things into context. So I applaud that, and I certainly do applaud looking at those job descriptions when you have those, and making sure that you have a job analysis done, especially if you're an IO, you know, that you've done some form of job analysis, and then that you've validated that against what the incumbent is actually doing. So I think that's really important. But what I really wanted to say was, I really like that, who is that, Falcone, gave permission for people to be a change agent on all of this, which I think is like just superb, because really, you know, if you can, I went to thinking about Cotter's eight stage change, and the collective eye roll probably just happened here because we've heard this since 1996. But the reality is that, you know, if you can create a vision, communicate that vision, and get others involved in that, to make a change, to make a significant change, to change the way that the culture is, so that we're not dreading this performance review, but we're making it something that we can all embrace. I think, you know, if you can generate short wins, you know, and kind of follow that formula, it's a way to pave the way to a, you know, better way of doing performance evaluations.
I like the story concept. I think next time I have a review, I'm going to walk in with a short film that I've made. That might be effective. Alexander, let's go to you.
So I'm going to chime in real quick. I really like the resume idea from Linda, and I think that helps make an employee feel like, hey, the company isn't just leaving them out to dry. It shows a commitment to the employee, also an openness to them being able to exit that strategy and company. So I love that idea. But what I'm hearing here is reminding me very heavily of what I see in IT as well, and what has plagued IT for decades. And that is, we have really good areas where we can improve the business, but we usually lack being able to get the buy-in from the executives or the board or the shareholders. And what I'm hearing isn't necessarily how to get the business speak on that side there. I heard, and I'm gonna pick on the spreadsheets, that's a really horrible thing today's time. you have applications like AppSheet on Google Workspace that drives in where you can actually format all of the items here that we're talking about, where we can actually organize all this data. The managers can access it. The employees can access it. That then drives directly into our business data centers like Looker and our other applications that then the executives can see that exact data, being able to know which departments are meeting these parts, which people are maybe falling a little bit behind. And then we can actually start to make real business decisions based off of the business data that we need to be doing. And so then we're starting to build that divide between the IO and HR speak and the business speak of, here we actually have business data that's showing that we're actually going to be producing some type of revenue. Because just like kind of HR and IT, they both share that same thing. They're usually under the CFO because we're a cost. We're not usually looked at as we actually can drive revenue. Whereas you look at something like sales, it's directly to the revenue, and you have your VP of sales who reports directly to the CEO. You're starting to see part of that with chief people officers and chief information officers, but we're not quite there yet. So I think that's one big point we need to hit on, is how to actually make this actionable data that people can use. Well, I apologize for the skin.
Let me ask you, Alexander, because I think Jeremy was about 2 years ago, we actually had a conversation with an economist who actually, they developed how to put human capital on the balance sheet as an asset. Do you think if organizations moved in that direction, that would actually improve a lot of this?
Yes, it's the same situation we're in with IT. You've had one company in Canada who's been doing it for decades. Gartner is just now doing it. They haven't even finished their data yet on their collection. But it's how to frame our cybersecurity aspects, not so much as a lot of CIOs will report, you know, we've blocked X amount of emails this month. But what does that do for any business? Can I stop more spam emails coming in? No. So this isn't a business thing that I can actually make a decision from. So just like CIOs, we're kind of having to adjust how we're reporting and how we're thinking about our solution. So yes, to your answer in a long form.
Well, thank you for that. Shauna, welcome to WorkCookie. Let's go to you.
Hi, everyone. I'm an IO student, a grad student at University of Maryland, and kind of in tune with what Tom had asked earlier about upward feedback. And then in connection with what Nick was saying, that like teams are changing and things like that. I recently had to do a group project teaching conflict management and upward feedback. And I found an article that was outlining that reciprocal feedback had shown increased like production and like team involvement. So I guess I was a little curious as to what the group would have to say also, like in that same framework, and seeing how the work environment is changing to more of a like team environment, what your thoughts were on like 360 feedback and performance, like getting all of those feedback in from everyone that's tied to the performance piece.
Tom, if I could, I'll go ahead and cut in on that. So Sean, I love this. So next week's topic is right on that. It's the feedback effect, fulfilling the purpose of performance interviews. So if you would be so gracious, I'll drop my email address to you in the chat. Send me that article. I'd love to have you come back too, if you could make it for next week. And I would love to have you speak more on that, and we'll get really in depth with that if that works for you.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Perfect. Thank you. Tom, back to you.
And props to the University of Maryland for having a student here. Dr. Martha, let's go back to you.
A quick thing about what Alexander said about how employers see their employees, because that makes all the difference in the world in terms of everything you do as an employer, including performance evaluations. Because I have seen time and time again, anybody who is seen as strictly overhead is seen very differently than those who may be in sales and in a more obvious way bring in the money. So that is tremendous, right? Because to me, and this isn't just me, this is how it is, people. Every single employee is equally important. Otherwise, that position would not exist in the company, because That's just the way it is. That's the reality. If a position is not needed in a company, it will eventually go away. But I see time and time again that there are very definitive differences in how people who are seen as strictly overhead are treated, and that will affect what the employer does or doesn't do, change or doesn't change in terms of performance review. So that was a very important point. I just wanted to take it to that next step.
And thank you very much for that. Linda Ann, over to you.
So just to Shauna's question about 360 feedback, one of the human resource management systems that I've used had mechanisms that you could, as a manager and as a human resource person, there was a way for anybody to provide feedback on any other employee. And you could, it could be a kudos, it could be a thing where they identified an issue when they were working together. And also at the time of review, it would send out, you know, you could prompt it to send out an email to anybody on their team or that they worked with, and you could identify them, and you asked for feedback on them. Those individuals could also say, yes, share that, it was me that provided that information, or not to share that, who it was to provide the information. And it was a pretty helpful process, so that it wasn't every year you have to give this 360 major survey on different people. It could happen as the performance reviews were done, and it was very specific to that person, and it did provide some outside perspective on that. So I just wanted to provide that information on resource.
That's a good little nugget. And here we are, Jeremy. It felt like 5 minutes. And a whole hour has gone by. A great topic. And where are we going to take it next week again?
I'm going to give 2 shout-outs before we go, one to Heather and one to Christina. But first, to what Alexander was saying, I don't disagree with you with the whole spreadsheet thing on the bigger level. I think the spreadsheet idea was more towards the micro, just to be used for teams. I agree that in terms of data for organizational tracking and such, that there's other things that better than that for that. I think it was more of for kind of a baby step for intact teams to be able to share and see here's what my team members are doing, have a place to track. One of the things that Falcone mentioned is sometimes people say, I'm the one doing all the work. So it's a way to get a snapshot of what the team's doing, where they're at, and to also cross collaborate and just to kind of stay in the know. But definitely agree with you on that. Christina Walsh is here. Christina leads our every other Tuesday, we have a members only momentum session. Christina's absolutely fantastic. We email back and forth about the sessions and setting them up. And every time she does, my entire day just gets better because she's so enthusiastic and I get momentum every time. So Christina, thank you. And Heather Morton's here. She's gonna be starting up a CBOC South region. We've got now with what we have now, and I was going to say, Christine also plays a big role in the Northeast regional meetups. So we have every part of the U.S. covered except for like California, like a West Southwest region. But Rich, can you hear me okay?
I can. But is it Chicago region or Midwest?
We covered? Midwest. That's actually one that we got coming up. Yeah. So we do have those. We actually have 3 different ones. But on your note about what's next time, we've got there's a in-person meetup this month in Denver. There's one in Salt Lake City, Utah. All these are on cboc.com/events. And of course, there's the one for the Northeast region, the virtual meetup. So we're doing, and you don't have to be a CBOC member to attend. We just want the IO community to, you know, close-knit group of many. That's what we always strive for. I already mentioned what the topic on feedback for next week is. If you're a CBOC expert member, we've got our happy hour coming up on March 13th at 7 p.m. for CBOC expert members. Again, this is all on cboc.com/events. I also want to draw attention to, if you go to the cboc.com homepage, we have these podcasts, and we do have locked and loaded videos for a lot of them. We're trying to figure out what exactly to do with that, but every now and then we put one up. We put episode, 190 maybe, it was with Dr. Deborah Peck. So we've got that video completely edited, nice, good to go, where she talks about that was the team tapestry, weaving in group interactions. And that's when I did the screen share showing the parts of her book with organizational network analysis and all that. So if you go to the CBOC home page, that's embedded there. You can just click on it or it'll take you to YouTube so you can watch it there. But yes, excellent. I can't wait for next week because we're going to keep going.
Well, now I need the Canadian IOs to start getting some meetups going up north here so that I can go.
Yeah. And if you're in Canada, and if you're in any region, really, we'll help you set up some regional events, even if it's abroad. So definitely give us a message and we'll get you going.
Well, and I'd love to go to that meetup, but I open a show tomorrow night, so I'm going to be a little bit busy.
You are?
I am. The Birds and the Bees takes flight tomorrow night.
Oh, break a leg.
We've got to start putting some of your stuff up on the CBOC website. There was that video, Tom, that you did that just, oh my gosh. I've seen Tom, it's crazy. It's not crazy in a bad way. We've got to get some of your stuff up so that people can watch. So
I'll start to share.
Yeah, it's good.
And with that, Jeremy, I think maybe you should count us out and we'll see everyone back in 1 week's time.
See you next week. Counting out in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Work Cookie, a CBOC podcast. Don't forget to sign up at CBOC.com. That's SEBOC.com to engage with our community, gain a sense of belonging, access our other media, and get rapid advice from experts. Would it be a bad idea to make your most challenging workplace problems go away? At CBOC.com.